Welcome back, everyone, to Campfire Tales. Today, I got something incredibly spooky and not out of the ordinary when it comes to my channel. I got a horrific, apocalyptic, zombie story that I can't wait to share with you tonight. If you like true and creepypasta scary stories, make sure that you subscribe and click that notification bell so you never miss another video, and smash that thumbs up. So make sure that you stick around, because you're not going to want to miss tonight's story. Now, let's get spooky. My name is unimportant, but it is what it is. I'm a member of an elite unit you've never heard of. We contain incidents of all kinds. Not only do we deal with the physical issues, but also keep the information from the public. It's better that way. It keeps people from panicking and maintaining order. I found a notebook on my last mission. Even though it violates the rules, I owe it to the author to tell his story. I know it'll be written off as some conspiracy theory or some crackpot Reddit post, so there's no real danger, I think. It reads, "Here I sit, in this moldy, godforsaken cell, awaiting my unfair death sentence to be carried out. I can't stand my neighbors. They're nasty and they stink. It's my own fault. If I hadn't been responsible and tried to help, I wouldn't be here right now. Ironically, doing the right thing has doomed me. It all started a long time ago in the golden age that I like to call last week. Good morning, Miss Wattner. You're looking as lovely as ever," I said. For someone who looks so old that even a mummy would turn tail and run from, I thought. "Why, Jonathan, aren't you sweet?" "Thank you, ma'am. Will that be paper or plastic?" "Paper, of course. We could always grow some more trees, can't we?" "Yes, ma'am." "And maybe one day soon we'll use some for your coffin." The old crone drifted away, flashing her huge diamond ring and mink coat. I never understood why she even bothered to come to the grocery store when she could have one of her servants do it for her. And then it hit me. This was her way of staying in touch with the commoners, of proving to herself that she was indeed still human. I can't blame her too much. If I was insanely rich, I'd want to flaunt it too. Uh-oh. Looks like Mr. Bergs is heading towards Jane's register. I better get help. Jane, you have an urgent call in the office. I'll cover for you. A wave of relief washed away and panic that had flooded her face. "Thank you," she whispered, touching my shoulder and sending warmth through me. "Hmm," Mr. Bergs mumbled, leering at her as she went. "Taking away the only good part of my day." "Good morning, Mr. Bergs. Are you having a party?" I asked as dozens of cans of Sterno rolled down the belt, followed by 10 boxes of matches and 5 cases of bottled water. "Never you mind what I'm doing," he growled. I struggled to stay upright from the stench of alcohol that came from his mouth. "Yes, sir. That'll be $157.32." He grumbled something that I couldn't make out of his gnarled fingers, reaching into his pocket and pulled out 2 brand new $100 bills. I handed back his change and said, "You have a good day now." He shot me a look of scorn mixed with pity that I would expect to see a hunter give a wounded prey. "Hmm," is all he said as he scuffled out through the door. As I watched him go with the same look of scorn and pity, a man stumbled into the door. He wasn't remarkable in any way, but somehow told me to keep an eye out on him. He was of average height and size, but he shuffled instead of walking. The look in his eye was vacant, as if the lights were on, but no one was home. He shuffled past me just as Jane returned to her register. She shot me a look of gratitude, with just a little hint of affection. But I was too focused to acknowledge it. As if memorized, I drifted behind him, trying to maintain inconspicuous as he slowly made his way to the pharmacy section. I turned the corner and there he stood, swaying back and forth as though driven by a non-existent breeze. I approached him and said, "Can I help you?" As he turned towards me, I could see scratches on his neck and a hint of dried blood under his jacket. He stared at me with those empty eyes. Instinctively, my hand slipped behind my back and grabbed the handle of the knife I carried with me just in case for an occasion. I set up my feet and prepared for him to lunge at me. This is it, I thought. 12 years working in this job and it's finally paid off. I am at the right place at the right time to stop the outbreak, or I'll spend the next 20-something years somewhere worse. I pulled the knife out just an inch when he cleared his throat.
"I'm sorry. It's my wife. She isn't feeling well."
I slid the knife back into its sheath and said, "I'm sorry to hear that. Is there anything that I could help you find?" His vacant eyes drifted back to the shelf. He picked up a bottle of Midol and a pack of tampons.
"These should do."
He tried to force a smile and shuffled past me towards the checkout. But something was still nagging about him. I went back to the registers and started bagging groceries while he waited in line. When he shuffled through the front door, I mumbled something about needing carts and followed him outside. He had parked at the far edge of the lot. But even partway there, I could see the car he was heading for, and he was rocking back and forth and sounded like somebody was pounding from inside. As I approached, I saw blood smeared all over the window and the face of a large woman pressed against the glass. I was 30 feet away when he reached the car and unlocked the door. "Don't!" I screamed, reaching for my knife. But he had already pulled the door handle. She exploded out of the car and launched herself at him, and she began devouring him like a starving lion on its prey. She clawed at him and ripped at his throat with her teeth, making a ton of blood. He tried to cry out, but all that came out was a bloody gurgle. I shook off the shock of the pure, stark reality of the situation and took advantage of my opening. I held my knife over my head close to my eyes and swung it as hard as I could. I missed on the first try and only managed to slice off her ear. Needless to say, that got her attention. She ceased gorging on him and turned towards me. Shit. I tried to ready myself in a defense stance, but she lunged at me growling. I held the knife in front of me and she impaled herself onto it. Unfortunately, it sunk into her neck. The force of her impact knocked me to my back. I nearly lost consciousness when my head bounced off of the pavement. My vision swam as she snapped her bloody teeth at me. I held her at bay with the knife that was still lodged in her throat. The same knife I would need to kill her. After a quick moment's thought and a frantic plan, I shoved my forearm into her chest and yanked the knife free. I lost ground in the process and felt her teeth scrape my nose as I swung the knife around and buried it into her ear. It looked like a movie on pause. She stopped with her mouth frozen open, then slowly rolled off of me. I sat up as best as I could, stared down at her, pulling my knife out, and shoved it in his ear just before he turned.
"Freeze!"
came a yell from behind me. I turned to see three police officers with lights flashing. Six officers all pointed their guns at me.
"Drop the knife, get on your knees, and lace your fingers behind your head," the officer screamed.
"Are you kidding me? I just saved everyone," I said.
"Do it now or we'll shoot you."
My knife clattered to the ground and I did as I was told. In a heartbeat, I was cuffed and stuffed and riding towards the station. "Third degree murder? Are you nuts?" I yelled at the attorney seated across the table from me.
"That's the best I could do. You brutally murdered two people in broad daylight in front of dozens of witnesses."
"They weren't people anymore."
"Let me guess. You thought they were..."
"Yes, I did. And they were."
He threw his papers into his briefcase and started towards the door. "I'll register an insanity plea if you want me to." I'm not insane. You have to listen to me. We can't stop it. Find out who those people were and where they came from. The police in that town need to be alerted.
He paused and rolled his eyes. I already knew who they were and where they were from. Michael and Sarah Weston. They lived right here in Frost Creek. They both worked at the hospital. She was a nurse and he worked over in maintenance. I slumped in my chair. It's over. There was no way I could stop it if it started in town. The guards took me back to the cell where I sat in quiet desperation, trying to decide what to do next. I took the tablet and pencil that I was given when I was booked in and started writing this as a bit of history. Right now, it's just so I could keep my thoughts straight in my own head. I'll call it, Dear John, A Letter to the Undead. By the time I'm done reading this, there won't be anyone left alive to read it. It only started yesterday, when my life was still uncomplicated and boring. When I was done writing, my wrist hurt. Logging down the demise of humanity will do that. I tried to warn the officers when they would pass my cell in the meantime. It became a litany. Is there anything strange going on in town? Do you have enough food, water, and ammo at home? Is your family someplace where you could protect them? My concerns were met with scorn and even alarm. I guess they felt threatened even by my own questions. I don't know why. After a while, the officers came through less and less. That is when it happened. My cell window looked out towards the truck stop. I was laying in my bunk when I felt as much as I heard the explosion. I jumped up and stared in shock at the tanker truck that was in flames, sending black smoke pouring into the air. 5 minutes passed, then 10, and still, no fire trucks had arrived. With little wind, the smoke had settled at street level, making visibility near zero. An hour later, the wind had picked up and blew away the haze just enough to see the sun riding low at the horizon. That's when I saw them. They were shambling through the haze, unfocused with no direction. They just came. I watched with a helpless detachment, knowing that there was nothing that I could do about it. I heard the first gunshots minutes later. They shambled into the cell blocks two or three at a time. It didn't take long for them to smell fresh meat. They surrounded my cell, reaching through the bars like groupies at a rock concert. Thank God there was a wall behind me. I watched in hopeless fascination as the inmate in the cell next to me got too close to the bars and was torn apart. So here I sit. The putrid scent of death and decay is overwhelming, but no more than the knowledge meant that I could have stopped this or at least warned people if I hadn't been arrested. The least I could do was write this letter to whoever might be left alive to read it, so they might know how things began and it might help those in some small way. Day 2. I could honestly say that this is the first time I've even entertained the thought of drinking out of the toilet. Thirst is driving me mad, though, and the sink is unfortunately located right next to the bars. My guests have gotten bored and had moved on just as I thought they would. If anything, they seem to have doubled in numbers. On the plus side, all the growling and jostling that they had made had kept me awake so that I wouldn't have to worry about being grabbed in my sleep. No. I could be sure that I'll be awake and alert so that I feel every set of teeth as I'm slowly being devoured. It's always good to think positively. One of the deputies has made his way to the front of the cell. The keys to his cell dangled tantalizingly from his belt. I'm hypnotized by them. I could go insane just thinking about the possibilities. But the fact of the matter is that I would be dead before I even shoved the key into the lock. It does make me smile, though, knowing that the Walking Dead are too brainless to realize that they literally have the key to my demise. Day 3. I did it. I'm not proud of it. But the overwhelming thirst drove me to it. Unfortunately, there's not too much left in the bowl. I flushed to see if the water level would rise again, but it didn't. I kept the bowl clear of contaminants, though. I have taken some small measure of revenge against my future killers by relieving myself in their mouths. I become a fairly accurate shot, too. I stand just out of reach and then fire away. They do draw back from it, though, but I don't know why. I'm sure it doesn't even register in their dead brains. It's still strange, though, because the ones that I hit, they don't return. Day 4. I can't stand the relentlessness, the overwhelming, crushing thought that I am powerless, that at some point I will succumb. I'm going to try to grab the keys. I don't know what I'll do from there, but it is clear that help is not coming. If I want to survive, I'm going to have to do it on my own. Day 5. This will be my very last entry. I can't believe what a fool I was. Even though I was able to grab the keys, I paid for it dearly. Even though I was able to grab for the keys, I paid for it dearly. Two of them got a hold of my arm and bit right through it. I wrenched away with all my strength, screaming in sheer agony as my injured arm ripped away from my body, leaving them with a snag and with me a bloody stump. I'm bleeding out as I write this. I haven't even tried to stop it. I'd rather die this way than be ripped to pieces by these creatures. At least, it's on my terms, and not theirs. If somebody finds this, I hope that something in these pages is of some help. I just wish it could have been more. Maybe by keeping these creatures distracted here, someone will have a fighting chance to escape. I hope so. Goodbye. I destroyed the notebook. Standard procedure. Contain the threat. Contain the information. That's what we do. It was a big deal locally, but we were able to keep it out of the national news. We had told the public that there was a gas leak that had made the people sick and that it was being contained. The explosion at the gas station was covered as a random accident. It did help us to clean up, though. Nothing like a giant fire to throw all the undead bodies in. I salute this unfortunate soul for his brave sacrifice. I just wish that we would have been called sooner. We might have been able to save him. Well, I hope that you guys enjoyed the story tonight. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe, and smash that thumbs up. And we'll see you next time.